Well, it's good to be with you this morning. If you have your Bibles, we're going to open up to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. And I want to start reading in verse 3. The actual text that I was given is verse 6, but I want to put it in its context, and so we're going to read a little more before and a little more after. Verse 3 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to His abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. Wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto the praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen, ye love, in whom, though now you see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls." My topic is seeking joy and sorrow, seeking joy and sorrow. And the reason that I wanted to put that text, that verse 6, in its wider context is because we see the bigger picture Peter sets up for his audience. You may know this already, but as Peter is writing, he's writing to a group of people who are under heavy persecution. They are being blamed for the burning of Rome, and they are suffering, and they are under much sorrow. And as Peter begins to write this letter to these people, really in the first couple of verses, as he begins to talk about God's work of salvation, really Peter reminds them that while you may be rejected by the world, you are chosen, you are accepted by God. As he goes down from there, he begins to talk to them about what that means, because while they had been scattered and while they had been persecuted on earth, there is an inheritance that is reserved for them in heaven that is incorruptible and undefiled, and all those things that Peter begins to talk about. And he says, this inheritance is kept by the power of God. And by the way, you're kept by the power of God. And if need be, there's going to be some trials while you're here. After he gets finished with verses 3, 4, and 5, he says, you rejoice in these things. You rejoice in this salvation. But he says, for a little time, for a season, it's necessary that your heaviness through many temptations, that you have been made sorrowful through many temptations. And he says the reason that that is necessary is that as you go through those trials, your faith is being put to the test. And as your faith is put to the test and you come out of that, then what you began to rejoice in at the beginning, you receive the substance of at the end. I don't know if that makes sense, and I hope it will make more sense as we go through, but really as I think about this, I think about our faith being tried, which just means our faith is being purified. Not so that as God puts your faith to the test, He can see what you're made of, but it's as God that puts your faith to the test, you can see what your faith is made of that God has placed in you. And where in verse 6, you rejoice at the reality of salvation. By the time you get down to verse 9, you not only rejoice in the reality of salvation, but you are rejoicing in the experience of God's faithfulness in that salvation to your souls. And so, as we look at this, I just want to start out by saying, when we think about joy and sorrow, Sorrow is a universal human experience. There is no possible way for you to escape sorrow. In a room with this many people in it, could we trace your life from now until the day that you die? We would be overwhelmed if we were to know the sorrows that will play out in the lives of the people that are here today. And so I just want to say that this message is a message on how to endure sorrow, not escape sorrow. Okay? There's no Christian trick to pull you out of sorrow. There's no biblical trick to make pain not painful. But the Bible does give us instruction on how we can endure sorrow and how we can endure pain. And it's fitting because the one that we are being conformed to while he's on earth was labeled as, known as, summarized as a man of sorrow who was acquainted with grief. And if we think that we're going to make it from this world to the next without pain and sorrow, it's delusional. It just doesn't happen. And so sorrow is a universal experience. It comes in a lot of different forms. A lot of it is our circumstances. Sometimes changes occur that we didn't want to occur. We lose people or we lose things that we didn't want to lose. Sorrow most of the time is unexpected. It just kind of shocks you. Many times the sorrow is what Brother Timothy described earlier as just being kind of put on the outside of the group. It's unfair treatment. It's someone persecuting you or someone mistreating you. And we just can't get around being sorrowful about that. It hurts. Not only is sorrow universal, but sorrow is a very personal experience, isn't it? I'm going to tell you why it's so personal, at least one of the reasons why it's so personal, because it tends to uncover our very personal weaknesses and deficiencies. So that people who are suffering often say or think things like, is God punishing me for something? You see, this is personal. This is about me. I'm hurting. Or maybe people who are suffering and they don't think they're suffering well might ask the question, what is wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I wish I were a stronger person. I wish I could handle this better. I've spoken to several people who have had long-term struggles, and many times the things that will come out of their mouths are things like, I hate the way I am. I wish I could handle this better. I've been struggling with this for years, and it still just tends to overcome me. And so sorrow is very personal. We could go on and on and on. And you've got your own phrases and you've got your own things that either you have said or you will say. Because while sorrow is can be looked at from many different dimensions, the one thing about sorrow is that it is never abstract. In other words, you are never looking at your own sorrow from afar. As you look at your own sorrow, it's in the context of your own pain and your own emotions and your own weaknesses. As we look to the Bible, we see very early on that the Bible is a book about sorrow. This is not the first mention of it, but I'm going to turn to Exodus chapter 3. And as the narrative here in Exodus begins, in chapter 3, verse 7, speaking of God, it says, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. God looks down upon his people and he sees their affliction, he hears their cry, he knows their sorrows. The Bible is a book that's full of sorrows. But I also want you to know that the Bible is also a book that gives hope in the midst of sorrows, because as God recounts what he has seen in his people, the very next verse says in verse 8, "And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land, unto a good land, and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto a place," and we could continue on there, but I won't. We find sorrow, and then we find deliverance from sorrow. Many times it's deliverance through sorrow. In John chapter 16, the Gospel of John chapter 16, verse 33, very last verse here. Christ has been teaching his disciples. He's been speaking comfort to them. And this is what he says in verse 23. "These things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." And so I come here to make this point before we say anything else about sorrow and how to endure sorrow and how to have joy in the midst of sorrow. The peace that is found in a world full of tribulations is a peace that is found only in the person of Jesus Christ. So that this message that speaks to joy and sorrow is a message that offers hope for Christians. And so I want to make that clear. If you're an unbeliever this morning, I hope that as you listen to this, your hearts will be stirred at the mercy and the beauty of Christ. But if you remain an unbeliever, this message is not to you. This is not a practical tip or a practical trick for you. Because the truth is, as we live in a world that is... Look at the contrast Jesus makes. "These things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace, in the world you'll have tribulation." You see, if you're someone who is just stuck in the world, the only thing you have access to is one tribulation after another. And while you might find a little bit of a spark of joy as you just begin to ride the wave up to the next trial, it will not last. And so it's for Christians, those who have put their faith, their trust in Jesus Christ. The theme of the conference is out of darkness and into his marvelous light. And so again, I just want to say there is no peace found in darkness. Just temporary distractions at best, but no peace found in darkness. And so as we look at this, I just want to, again, make sure that you understand that the peace that we're speaking about this morning, the joy that we're speaking about this morning, is a joy that comes through the person and work of Jesus Christ. And so from there, the next point I want to make is that for the Christian, as we go through sorrow and we seek joy, this is going to come through a focus, not a feeling. It's important for you to understand that. Joy is a state of being. Joy is not the way that you feel all the time. And so as you go through sorrow and you go through difficult times, Paul points the Philippians to this truth in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, as he talks about and gives them a list of things that they ought to be thinking on as they're going through their struggles. And so I want to this morning give you several things, and they come out of our text there in 1 Peter, several things to kind of help you navigate your way through suffering with joy. Now let me give you the first one. And the first one is the fact that God is up to something in your life, whether you perceive yourself to be in good circumstances or bad. And what God is doing in your life is that He is working every single circumstance that comes along in your existence for your good in conforming you to the image of Jesus Christ. I just want to stop there and say, that's the most joyful statement I'm going to make to you this morning. The thought that God might make me more like Jesus Christ. When the Holy Spirit opens your eyes and your heart to that reality, it's such a precious truth that it will sustain you through difficulties. Many of you know, several years ago, when I say several, I guess I mean 2.5, we had my wife gave birth to a son who had some complications. We really didn't know what they were at first, and so we were kind of left in limbo for a couple of hours, and the cardiologist came in, and it turned out he had several holes in his heart. Within 12 hours, 14 hours after he was born, we were rushed to a children's hospital, and then we were told that he had Down syndrome, and then we were told that he had a colon disease, and some of his colon would have to be taken out. I think it was day 3 of his life he had a colon surgery. And then we were stuck in the hospital for about 6.5 weeks. And then I got out of the hospital, and it was the week right before Camp Moriah. I don't know, most of you know what Camp Moriah is. And so it was the week right before Camp Moriah, and so I got to make it to the last work day. I enjoy those work days. And I was really looking forward to that. And I went down to help clean one of the bathrooms, and there's tile floor. And so I took a squeegee down there to help just push some of that water out. About my second thrust with that squeegee, I pinched a nerve in my back, and I just fell down and hit the ground. And that was it for me on that day. By the time I got home, I couldn't get my legs in the bed. I was having to pull my legs up by my pants. And I was just laying there thinking, what in the world? So I was kind of down, but I was not out. What I mean by that is this. From the beginning, God had blessed me to be able to look at those circumstances, and He had blessed me in many ways, but one of the things that He continued to remind me was, Lewis, the purpose of your existence is that you would be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. And as God brings trials and God brings sorrows and God brings sufferings, He's using those to mold you into the person that He wants you to be, not the individual that I plan to be. And so we're being conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. There's great hope in that, which is our first topic here for joy. If you're going to have joy, I'm going to tell you, you can't look to the world. And so what I mean by that is this. If you're down and you're kind of down in the dumps and you're wishing that the Lord would bring you out of that, you're going to have to make sure that you find your joy in things that God lets us know that we can find joy in. So you may be thinking, it's been forever since I've been able to go out and watch a movie with my friends. I wish I could get that joy back in that. Or it's been forever since I've been able to, and you can fill in the blank. Well, as the Lord speaks to us about that joy and that sustaining joy, I want to give us four things that that are consistent in that, that produce joy. And the first is joy through hope. Joy through hope. Can anybody give me just a concise definition for hope? Doesn't have to be scholarly. Doesn't have to be anything special. Somebody give me a definition for hope. What does hope mean?
Confident expectation.
How many people knew that? Come on now. How many people knew that? Yeah. Well, how come nobody said anything except for Brother Jeff? All right. Confident expectation. When you think about hope, this is what I want you to think about. I want you to think about expectations. What are you expecting God to do in your life? Because so much of the time, the sorrow that we started out with is compounded because we're expecting God to do something for us that He never said He would do. A lot of times we're made sorrowful and we fall into despair because we want God to live off of every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Lewis or Isaac or put your name in the blank.
We get upset because God's not obeying us, right? And God never said He was going to obey us. We get upset because God hasn't withheld trials from us. And God never said He was going to withhold trials from us. But we do have hope. That is, we do have a confident expectation. And the confident expectation is this. It's that God will be faithful to every single one of the promises that He's ever made toward us. Now, if we want our hope to grow and we want our hope to be strengthened, then we need to be familiar with what? The promises of God. The promises of God. Many sorrows are multiplied through misplaced expectations. Let's go to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5. I'm just going to start in verse 1. It says, "Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost which is given unto us." And so once we hit verse 3, Paul talks about the fact that we, being justified, have peace with God. And then we have been given access by faith into His grace wherein we stand. And then he says, we glory in tribulation also, because we know this about tribulation. Tribulation produces patience or endurance, okay? Endurance produces experience. And experience produces hope. And hope makes not ashamed. Now let me ask you this. How many people here would wish or hope for, be hopeful? Maybe I should say it this way. How many people here would desire that you would be able to have a strong hope or a strong confidence in expecting God to fulfill His promises in your life? How many people here would desire that? That hope would really be an anchor to your soul? Okay? As you look at Romans 5, Paul goes through how that happens. And the truth is, you will never have a strong hope if your life consists of a joyful existence on a pontoon somewhere, sipping Coke and eating hot dogs all your life. It doesn't work that way. This is what he says. He says, tribulations work endurance. In other words, endurance can't be produced until you've actually gone through the trial. And then endurance produces experience, so that as you look back, you have that experience, you know what to expect. You've been there, it's not unfamiliar. And then experience produces hope, because your experience will always point to the fact that God was faithful in your life. And so as Peter talks about this, really part of what he's talking about is just getting over the shock value. I've got a little girl that's 6 years old, and she and her cousins come over, and they love to run around in the yard without their shoes on, barefooted. And something always happens as they do that, and that something is they always get splinters in their feet. And so the first time Lily got a splinter in her feet, she came to us, and you would have thought we were trying to amputate her leg. By the time we got the splinter out, I was holding her leg and her foot like that, and Abby was holding her heel, and she had the tweezers, and Lily would just, I mean, it sounded like she was having a limb amputated. Well, she doesn't stay perfectly still now. But we can get those splinters out a lot quicker. You want to know why? She's already gone through the trial.
She's got the experience. She knows that it's going to hurt, but it's not going to hurt that much. She knows she's going to survive. And she knows that her mommy and daddy are not going to inflict unnecessary pain on her in getting that splinter out. If I could just use that illustration in some way to illustrate your lives and your sufferings with God, it's not until you get that splinter in your foot that you realize God and His goodness will not inflict more pain than is necessary to conform you to the image of Jesus Christ. And on the way, He will be faithful to carry you all the way through. Joy through hope. And I've got these little phrases to maybe kind of keep this a little memorable, but the first thing in hope is this: we got to get a grip on our expectations. We're so self-centered sometimes. We got to get a grip on our expectations. The second is joy through faith, and that is getting a grip on reality. Getting a grip on reality. Faith is tied to your concept of reality or what's actually going on, because faith is how you interpret and how you make sense out of life. So that as you could look at, we could be looking at the same circumstance and come up with two different interpretations. If I were looking at someone who was maybe a homeless person, and a Hindu was looking at a homeless person, we would have two different interpretations as to how it was that they had gotten there. There are those people who look at karma, and those people who look at the caste system, and those people who look at fate in such a way that we would not. It's never crossed my mind to think that someone, due to their karma that they have stored up, happened to be where they are for that reason. And the reason is because karma is not really even a category in my thinking. But as a Christian, I'm going to tell you what ought to be a category in our thinking, and that is, what is God up to here? God is doing something here, even if I can't see it. And so what faith does is faith looks to God, faith looks to that which cannot be seen. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Second Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8. Paul speaking here of his experiences. He says, "We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our body. For we which live are alway delivered unto the death of Jesus, unto death for Jesus' sake, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our mortal flesh." Then he continues on there, and I would read it, and you should read it, but for lack of time, I'm going to move down to verse 17. And he says, "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." Now, Paul in verse 18 really helps us zero in on the fact that if we are going to have hope, if we are going to have joy, if we are going to exercise faith, then what we are looking at makes all the difference in the world. I'm sure Alabama's a lot like Mississippi in that as you drive down the road, there's no telling what kind of a dead animal you're going to find just scattered out on the road at times. Am I right about that? Okay. Anybody ever just really looked at one of those? I'm serious. Anybody ever just really looked at one of those? Now let me ask you this. Is anyone in here, unless you've just got some kind of a real oddness about you, anyone in here really zero in on one of those and expect yourself not to just become completely disgusted with the sight and the smell of a roadkill animal on the side of the road? You see, I know before I get there, if I go to look at a dog that's been sitting on the road for days, I'm going to be completely grossed out and my stomach is going to be turned and I'm not ready for lunch after I do that. You see, what Paul says here is that what we're looking at makes all the difference. A lot of times we can get so focused on our circumstances and we can get so focused on our sorrows that the only thing we want to look at are the things that are going wrong in our life. And then we become surprised that we're still sorrowful. We become surprised that we're still depressed or we're still whatever the state is that we were in. You see, as you look at things that are sad, you naturally become sad. You've seen those commercials where everything's been fine, and all of a sudden this commercial comes on, and there's a sick child, or they've got that thing about the adopt-a-pet thing, and we were watching TV one time, and I looked over, and my grandmother was crying because of a pitiful dog, and I just thought, what in the world is going on? What you're looking at and what you're focused on makes a difference. And so Paul says, by faith, we look at the things that are not seen, and while we may not be able to see them, we know them to be true. While we may not be able to see how God's working, we know God's working. While we may not be able to see the good that God's bringing out of this right now, we know God's bringing good out of this right now. Since our son was born and we were in the hospital and experienced those difficulties and since then Abby has begun a ministry to try to help individuals, parents with children who have illnesses, diseases, long-term stays in the hospital. And she did not start that as something that would be anything very big, but it's getting bigger and bigger as we go. She started it, I think, about a year ago, and it's growing really fast. And one of the things that she says as she goes around and she talks at a few churches and different places, she says, when David was born and we got the diagnosis for Down syndrome, the first thing that I thought was, what good could ever come out of this? And she says, now I look at my son and I know. I would have never had a heart for all these families that were going through the struggles, the same struggles we were going through. I would have never had him on my mind. I know there are hospitals. I know there are children's hospitals, and I know there are children who suffer in those hospitals. But I'm going to tell you, I've got a completely different perspective than I did then. Do you want to know why? Because trials produce endurance, and endurance produces experience, and experience produces hope, and hope makes you not ashamed. You see, as I minister to folks, not within that context, but others. I'm a counselor at a community college, and then we do some counseling out in our communities a little bit. I'll be honest with you. I know I could be, but I am not ashamed to point people to the gospel of Jesus Christ to alleviate pain and suffering, because the reality is that's the only place that you can look to get long lasting, to get true, genuine relief. And here's why. Because Jesus never says, give me 5 minutes and I'll make it all go away. Take these pills once a day, every day, and I'll make it all go away. You know what Jesus says? You're going to go through the fires, and you're going to walk through the floods, and you're going to go through the difficulties, and I'm going to walk through them with you. And I'm going to give you the strength that you need when you need it. And so Paul says, when I look at my circumstances, I look beyond those to the reality that's hidden by faith. I can look at those by faith. Third, joy through obedience. Joy through obedience. Getting a grip on our reaction to pain. You know, there's nothing quite like pain to give us a wonderful excuse to sin, is there? You hear it, it's very common. That individual is the way they are because their parents just mistreated them as children. Now, I'm not going to try to pretend like none of that ever happens, but I'm also not going to pretend like it's not way overused. I did this because you did that. If it weren't for this suffering, I would have never even thought about going this way or that way. But here's the truth about pain. Pain almost gives us an entitlement mentality to where we need a little relief, and we get that relief, whether it comes from a sinful action, a sinful response. We just want to grab. We just want to go. Now, you may think that sounds crazy, but Peter didn't think it sounded crazy. And in the first chapter of 1 Peter, as he is talking to people who are under heavy persecution, one of the first things he does to them is call them to holiness. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, he says, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end, for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust and your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, Be ye holy, for I am holy. And if you call on the Father, who is without respect of persons, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear." And then he continues to go on there. Peter says, as you go through these trials, as you go through this suffering, go through them as obedient children. Now, there is a couple of different reasons. One I will bring up, that suffering tends to, if we're not careful, push us towards sinful actions. Really, the main reason is because we are all naturally very selfish. We don't want to hurt. We don't want to experience pain. I'm including myself in that. But secondly, we all naturally want to get this thing called suffering over with as quickly as possible. And so we will reach for whatever is available if it means this will stop hurting. And so maybe you feel like an outcast and you don't feel like you're accepted among the folks that you want to be accepted among. And maybe you feel like you've tried your best to find your way into that in crowd. And you may just throw up your hands and say, forget it. I've tried to fit in with Christians. I just can't do it. There's another area over here, another group over here. And while they aren't very godly, and I know that they are a really wicked influence, they have what I need at this time. It's not very uncommon to hear about folks who go through extended periods of suffering, who turn to alcohol, who turn to drugs, who turn to sex, who turn to you just name it, because they think what they're going to find is relief. You see, suffering tends to push us that way. And yet Peter says you need to reel yourself back in. You need to make sure that you're girding up the loins of your mind. That's particularly very important exhortation. Because what you're thinking is going to eventually dictate what you're doing. It's going to eventually dictate how you behave or how you frame your circumstance. And it never ceases to amaze me at what poor, poor advice or poor, poor responses people have to individuals who are suffering. It never ceases to amaze me how folks can just fuel a pity party. I don't mean we shouldn't be compassionate. We ought to be compassionate. But a lot of times, as we really don't know what we ought to be saying, silliness just kind of comes out. I'll tell you, one of the things that really hit me, it surprised me very much, was that after we had our son, we got several books that were meant for comfort to assure us that David, while he looked human, was actually an angel. Ridiculous. I remember looking at those books, Angel Behind the Rocking Chair, Angel in Mama's Arms, Angel in this, Angel in that, and it wasn't trying to be a term of endearment. They were trying to frame it as if David was an angel from God that he chose, the Virgin Mary had already died, and so Abby and I were the only two special people left at that time. And so he put this angel in our care. Well, that brought me no comfort. Matter of fact, as I looked at it, and I was I struggled not to be real cynical about it. But the point is, as silly as that sounds, we are not lacking for silly way to frame hard circumstances. But the truth is, as we look through the eye of faith and we get our expectations in line with God's promises, God will give us the strength to walk in obedience even if it's painful. And the other truth is, you will never alleviate pain and suffering by turning to sinful responses. You will only compound it. Now, let me give you this one. This is one I threw into the last minute, but I think it's very important. Joy through fellowship. When I say fellowship, I'm talking about fellowship with other Christians. Because another thing that suffering and trials and sorrow tends to do for us is it tends to drive us into isolation. We can convince ourselves of so many things that are not true. If we're not careful, we begin to think that we're the only ones that understand where we are. And if we stay there too long, we really will believe that, and we will refuse to be comforted by anything, even the Scriptures. We were trying to minister to a fellow one time, and the more we tried to minister to him, the more he let us know that no one understood him. Unless we had walked the road that he had walked, and unless we'd experienced the sinfulness that he had experienced, there's no way that we could really relate and speak truth into his life. And we would take him to the Word. And I want you to know that if you get yourself off in isolation and you continually tell yourself nobody understands, you will believe that, and there will be no comfort found for you outside of a miracle of grace by Jesus Christ. You will reject the Scriptures. You will reject those who love you. And I say that because it's common, right? How many people in here like to be in a crowd when you're suffering? Not me. Matter of fact, whenever we were in the hospital for all that time, I really did, outside of a select few people, wish people would just stop coming by. You don't want to talk to people. You don't want to answer the question, how are you doing? How do you think I'm doing? Right? You don't want to do all that. But the truth is, we need one another. We need that encouragement. We need to be pushed outside of ourselves. And so I want to encourage you to find joy in fellowship. And then last, joy in God. Joy in God. And that's getting a grip on the one who redeems all of our sorrows. It becomes very clear in 1 Peter that suffering is meant to drive us to greater fellowship with Christ. I don't know how many of you have gone through and studied this book, but if you do, it'd be a worthwhile study to go through and look at all the references that Peter makes to the sufferings of Jesus Christ and the fellowship that we have in the sufferings of Jesus Christ. And so joy in God. For time's sake, let me take you to Psalm 23 and just kind of give you a little walk through that psalm and just give you a few ways that I have personally been able to use that to find joy in God and to frame my own circumstances. I like this psalm because it's, well, number one, it's so popular in the sense that you know it. Most of you could probably memorize or could probably quote it or get close to quoting it. Let's just read it and then we'll go back and I'll make the points. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now there are six promises, and there may be more, but I've taken six promises out of Psalm 23 that you can trust and that you can rely on in any season of life, but I've found them to be particularly helpful in times of struggle, in times of sorrow. And so here's the first one, and I'm just going to, my points correlate with the verses. So point one's out of verse one. And that is, Jesus has taken on the responsibility of caring for you and meeting every single one of your needs. That's the truth that you find in Psalm 23, verse 1. God's my shepherd, and he has taken care of all my needs. I lack nothing. Now, how's that for a perspective changer when you're in the middle of suffering? You know, in the middle of suffering, we can convince ourselves that we don't have anything, right? Nobody loves me, nobody cares, nobody... But the truth is, Christ has taken on you as his responsibility for caring, and he's given you everything you need. Number two, he nourishes you. He provides satisfaction and peace. In verse three, he restores or converts your soul by leading and guiding you in right thinking and right living. Number four, he comforts you in times of fear through the knowledge of his presence. His presence is an assurance that I will always be protected from my enemies and even from myself. You don't have to scramble to write these down real fast. You can look at this list later. Number five, his provision cannot be hindered by the enemy in any way. You see, he sets a table for us, even in the presence of our enemies. And he nourishes and he cares for us and he provides abundantly for me, regardless of my circumstances. And then number five, God's goodness and mercy will violently hunt you down every single moment of your life. Isn't that wonderful? You know what makes it even more wonderful than just reading it? The fact that it's true. The fact that God's faithful to that. The fact that if you are looking for God to fulfill these promises in your life, you will find them. Because he does. And so my prayer this morning is that as you go through your seasons of suffering, that you would be able to get a grip on your expectations through hope, get a grip on reality by looking at life through the eye of faith, that you would be able to get a grip on your reaction to pain by living in obedience to Christ, and that you would be able to lay hold on the one who redeems all of your sorrows.